Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, it's a new year. Happy 2026. Thank God 2025 is over. What a year, man. I was reviewing back through all of our episodes and our activities at Let's Fix This over the past year. And like, holy crap, I can't even, it's like hard to remember what all happened in the first part of the year. It's been so long. This reminds me of like during the pandemic, which somehow feels like yesterday and also a long time ago. So here we are. I don't think I've done an episode for a couple of weeks now. That's mostly because of the holidays, and it's been busy. And I have found that when I have less time to record podcasts, you often have less time to listen to podcasts. But it's a new year, it's a new day, and we're back at it. But if you're watching this on YouTube, you may notice that I'm recording this from my kitchen because it's not really the start of the new year yet, right? That starts on Monday on the 5th when most schools are open. I think that's the important thing. I was just talking with a friend here a moment ago at the door, handing out some petitions for them to collect for State Question 836. And we were talking about how long it's been since our kids have been in school and it's starting to wear on us. Speaking of which, my daughter is in the next room watching Bluey, and so I may or may not be interrupted in the next 30 minutes with a question of hers. So I took a few notes about what's been happening over the last year. I thought we might do a very brief look back and then a little discussion of what's ahead. First, going back to last January, a new president was inaugurated, right? Donald Trump was re-inaugurated into the White House for his second and final term. Man, that feels like 30 years ago. So certainly, I think the Trump presidency 2.0 has like been a dominant theme of this year. And I think it has challenged our nation in so many ways. Right? What we expect for the rule of law, what we expect for legal precedent, what we expect for civil rights in our country, due process, I will say rampant corruption, but you could phrase it as the pay-to-play element of politics, the role of technology and the willingness for tech bros to roll over, to capitulate to an administration in order to curry favor has been just remarkable. I truly think that we have faced and are still facing situations that were hard to imagine just 2 years ago. And now that we have to face them, right? What do we do when a president sends National Guard troops into a city or a state against the wishes of the chief executive of that state, of the governor? Although I will say, apparently Trump announced over the holiday, this New Year's holiday, that he was removing troops from California and Chicago, LA and Chicago. But I mean, that's not something we've really had to deal with, certainly not in my lifetime, not to the degree. I mean, when's the last time? Kent State, something like that in the 60s, which brings back all of the conversations about civil rights. So that's really how the year kicked off, right? A little over a year ago. Then in the, you know, few months post-inauguration, the first 180 days, or first 100 days, whatever that is that they talk, first 100 days, which I think is an arbitrary and ridiculous benchmark, but campaign season being what it is, you had the rollout of all the DOGE cuts, right? The Department of Government Efficiency, I believe, is what DOGE actually stood for in the beginning, and yet it has been anything but that, right? It arguably crippled the government from performing its core functions for a long time. The rapid turnover, the widespread uncertainty meant that, I think, productivity tanked, right? People were at work, but they were spending all their time responding to the five things emails and listening to office gossip about what was going to happen next. There was a lot of apprehension everything has moved more slowly. We have a partner organization that had applied for their 501c3, you know, public charity status, and it took months and months and months because things at the IRS were moving more slowly. Well, to be fair, that was also right before the government shut down, which also happened this year, just towards the end. But the longest government shutdown in U.S. history, and it meant that, like, organizations, even private organizations, were hampered from fully executing their mission. And so in the meantime, you're like, well, what's happening? If all the folks on the ground, right, if the drones of public employment are slowed, right, if it's like they're like drone bees that are operating in cold temperatures, they fly more slowly and move less quickly, what happened? What was happening at the top levels? Well, we saw immense amounts of money flowing to individuals and to favored companies, including some of the tech companies, but also some defense contractors. Heck, general contractors, right? We've got the whole White House ballroom thing that's happened this year. It's not done yet, but I think the demo is complete and they're starting the site preparation for the construction. Who knows what this will end up looking like in the end? You know, in the aftermath of those Doge cuts, we started organizing a few support groups for individuals, federal employees, and their loved ones who were affected by these cuts, just to create space for people to come together, to vent, to cry, whatever. We held a few in Ponca City and Noble and Oklahoma City, and probably had about a dozen or a little more, 20 people that came. A lot of people said that they had talked to colleagues who wanted to come, but folks were nervous, right? They were so scared that if they, you know, maybe they had lost all of their colleagues to a Doge cut, but they themselves had been spared, but they were nervous to speak up or stand out in any way because they were afraid something might mark them and that they would lose their job and their family couldn't afford to lose their job. Huge agencies like USDA, right, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that oversees food and nutrition services for people who are food insecure, right, for millions of Americans, including hundreds of thousands of Oklahomans right here at home, have seen their workforces decimated by 10 to 20%, maybe more. That means there are fewer people out there helping ensure that food gets to the tables of the people who need it the most. Now, I know some will say this was good, that this was government bloat, that there were too many bureaucrats in these roles. And in some cases in government, that's probably true. But I can't imagine that, you know, tens of thousands of people for a massive agency whose job is difficult logistics of acquiring food, storing, redistributing food, and getting it out into the ground. Like, that's a lot of work. If someone asks you, hey, we need you to figure out how to get food into the hands of 40 million Americans, where are you going to source it? Where are you going to buy it from? Where are you going to store it? How are you going to distribute it? Like, there's a lot of stuff there. And when you stop that process, it makes it that much harder to get it started back. So it is no surprise that we have seen a negative impact, I think, on the lives of some of the Americans that have the least amount of space to give. And the folks that get hurt most by this are those that have the smallest voice to speak up. And so I know for me, and probably for many of you, one of the hardest parts of this year has been figuring out how to use our voice effectively, accurately and effectively, to speak up for those that feel unable to, for whatever reason. I think that challenge was highlighted during 2025, but is not unique to 2025. It is a challenge that we face again in 2026, something that we need to continue to strive for every day. And, you know, that's a lot of what got me into Let's Fix This, right? We're entering our 10th year. This 2026 will be 10 years from our first event, from when this all happened, because our state was facing a major budget crisis back then. Ironically, just a few weeks ago, the State Board of Equalization met and reported that the state's going to have between $600 and $700 million less this year to appropriate than they did last year, 10 years ago. Well, and that's not the final number. First of all, they will do it one more time in March, I think, and that'll be the final number. And if the trends continue, that number will be closer to $1 billion less, right? If we'll see what revenue looks like. But if that's the case, then we are approaching a level of financial crisis of our state that we haven't seen for literally 10 years. It is ironic to me that 10 years later of us doing this work, the state is very near to facing a crisis almost as bad, right? A budget shortfall of approaching $1 billion. And that means that, well, Republicans can't cut taxes, which they'd like to do. I mean, I guess all politicians like to cut taxes if voters love it, but it means they probably can't do that. It also means that they will have to cut services, right? The money's got to come from somewhere. You can't continue to fund everything you funded last year if you have less money. That's the way it works. If your income went down, you would have less money to pay your bills. That's the situation the state's in already. We're not in revenue failure position yet. It's not that critical, but we'll have to wait and see, right? Like, I hope it doesn't go that way. Golly, we had enormous across-the-board budget cuts 10 years ago. Our state still, I don't think, really has fully recovered from that. If we've kept pace, we're like back to where we were. But the legislature's going to have some really important decisions to make this year. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Now I'm talking about the future and not the past, and you probably feel like you're watching a Back to the Future movie, which are some of my favorites, but I know not everybody shares that. A few other like highlights from this year that I want to touch on. Our Democracy Drinks happy hours, we started in July, I think, have been huge. We have had, I think, on average, 32 people each month at those, and it's been growing. We're going to keep doing those in the new year. I haven't set the date yet, but it'll be generally around the third Friday of the month. It's always a good time. Please come join us. It is a great opportunity just to connect with like-minded folks. We tend to do it the same place every month for consistency. That makes it easier for everyone to kind of count on it. But if you are interested in moving it around occasionally, let me know. Hit me up. The reason we do it, because it's near downtown Oklahoma City. It's close to the highway. There's ample parking. It's got a patio and an indoor section, and there's food nearby. That's all pretty great. But I am open to other locations. I have a few ideas. The question is, can we get enough people to show up over there? Like, central locations are handy. But I'm not... We're open to whatever. So if you'd like to help organize one, or if you want to do one in partnership with us, like the same time, but a different part of town, like maybe you live in Del City and you want to host one on the same day, cool. It'd be cool to have these little pop-up happy hours all over the state, honestly. It's a great way to get people together. There's, you know, beer, wine, and non-alcoholic drinks as well. So, and all ages welcome. People bring their kids, bring their dogs, whatever. It's fun. It's really great to kind of just relax for, you know, 30 minutes or an hour. Maybe make a new friend. That's been fun. Or see an old friend. Last month, when people came, a guy brought his friend who I brought a friend. And then I happened to know the friend, but I hadn't seen him in like 5 or 6 years, probably since before the pandemic. And it was so serendipitous. You just never know who's going to show up. Back early last spring, too, we had our first partnership with a theater. OKC Repertory Theater, one of the shows they produced was What the Constitution Means to Me. It was excellent. We were facilitated a panel discussion with Mayor Holt and Dr. Emily Stacey from Rose State and Tamaya Cox-Toure from ACLU and I feel like one other person and I'm forgetting who it is and I apologize. But it was really great. It was a great kind of live event. I even brought my kids. Some of it was over their head. They were a little unsure how to feel about it because there were some probably more, you know, adult-y themes to it. But I think it's important. It wasn't bad. No worse than Avengers, for sure. Anyway, that was really fun. And we hope to do more kinds of partnerships like that in the future. We also did a very brief film series. We did 3 months at Rodeo Cinema with three documentaries that were really important about open primaries, about separation of church and state, and about the importance of joining groups. And I'm excited to tell you, friends, you are hearing it first here, that this coming Thursday, January 8th, which I know is short notice, I apologize, but we're doing another one. We're helping co-host another film event. This one will be at the Oklahoma Contemporary over on Broadway. And we're going to be screening Slay the Dragon, which is a film about gerrymandering and how to end it. It's about gerrymandering the issue, and it's about the Michigan campaign in 2018, a ballot campaign that passed a citizens' redistricting commission. It stars my dear friend Katie Fahey, who is the campaign manager up there. She's been here on the show before. I saw her just last month at a conference. It's great. It is a heartwarming and true story of people coming together to make real change in their state. And it's the kind of story that I think Oklahomans need to hear all the time, more and more, right? It is citizens saying, we're sick of this, right? We're sick of politicians drawing their own districts. That's insane. We should make an independent commission of citizens to take care of that because the district lines are about us, not about them, right? It's about where people live. It's not about who represents that district today. So anyway, this Thursday, January 8th, we will send out an email, hopefully today if I can get to it. If not, then for sure on Monday and try to get people there. We'd love to have you. Bring a friend. It should be super, super fun. Stand by. I have to respond to a message. Oops. Yes. sorry. A friend is collecting signatures for State Question 836, and they're at the park, and they said, can I collect here? And I said, sure. If someone is interested, they're happy to sign it. This Thursday, movie screening. We'll get back to that. Also, back this last spring was in April was CivicsCon, which is our big education event of the year. I have a planning meeting just a few days for CivicsCon 2026. I'm so stoked, you guys. Our one this year was really great. We had the AG from Minnesota, Keith Ellison, come to speak. He was amazing. And most of you weren't able to go, but on Saturday, we offered this add-on package, right? Like a VIP trip where A.G. Ellison wanted to go to Greenwood in Tulsa. He had never been. And we said, sure. So we got a van and offered it as kind of a VIP add-on to your CivicsCon tickets. And had several students who came. And we took a road trip up to Greenwood with A.G. Ellison, who was delightful. I drove the van. He sat right behind me. And he chatted with these students the whole way up there, answering questions about career planning, about reading lists, about his perspective on what's helpful in law school, on what kind of experiences they should seek out for internships, his perspective on the rule of law, on what was happening with the administration. It was a fascinating conversation that I wish we could have recorded it in the car. It was so personable, and I could just see in the rearview mirror watching these students just eating it up. It was really a highlight for me of the year. And then, of course, being there at Greenwood Rising with him, and kind of we kind of got a little behind the scenes tour, and it was he had a friend who flew in to meet us there as well, and it was really humbling. It's a humbling experience for anybody, and I know that, you know, as a white dude, like, it's a different experience for me than it is for him, who is a black man. And it's just an honor. So it was really cool. That was great. And if past is prelude, then CivicsCon 2026 is going to be awesome. So awesome. Also, this year, guys, is America's 250th birthday. It's Let's Fix This's 10th birthday, but, you know, whoopee, 10 years. I mean, that's a big deal for us, but America's 250. That's a huge deal. We should talk more about that, and we will. I went back through all my notes from the legislative session this year, and the dominant note that I had, all of my, like, emails we sent out, action alerts, all stuff, everything was about Senate Bill 1027, which, of course, was the bill that made some pretty sweeping changes to the state's initiative petition process. And as far as I have seen, the court has not yet ruled on the legal challenges to it. You know, a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, we had Amber England on the show to talk about that legal challenge. I think we're optimistic, but who knows? But it really made some, that's, for me, that is, was the biggest issue that we really focused on this year at the legislature. There are certainly plenty of other issues, like every year. You know, every year feels like the worst year, but, and I expect 2026 legislatively will be more painful and difficult than 2025 because it's an election year. And I hope in a few weeks we'll have some members of the legislature come on to talk about it, what they expect, a preview of what they expect for this session. The other dominant, I think, news topic from 2025 was stinking Ryan Walters, man. Even back in legislature when he was having ad hoc press conferences on Friday afternoons, you know, in his blue jeans, just to announce nothing, like, to the whole episode with the movie on in his office, like some Jackie Chan movie that had nudity during a board meeting. Just lots of stuff, lots of unanswered questions about Ryan Walters' leadership. And since he left a few months ago, we have seen the steady unrolling of his agenda, which I think is has been to the a welcoming shift for parents, teachers, and administrators alike, and probably students, to those who pay attention enough. I remember looking back at our podcast from this year. Ooh, I haven't looked at the data for which ones have been the most popular yet, but I will. One of them, though, that stood out as one of our more popular episodes was back in the spring when ICE raids were starting and DOGE was happening. And the title of the episode was WTF Are We Supposed to Do? Right? What the fuck are we supposed to do? And I remember the feeling then, and it hasn't gone away entirely, to be honest, but just this, the feeling of like, what's going on in the world? Everything feels crazy. How, what are we supposed to do about this? How do we respond? Who do we help when everyone is hurting? How do we triage our democracy? And I want to tell you, that's a question that we talk a lot about in some of the national organization rooms that I'm in. All the democracy, electoral reform, kind of bridging divides, community, rule of law groups. It's a real struggle. Everyone's got their thing. And we the challenge, I think, is that you can't drop all of them. You have to press all of them somewhat. Like you, the gas has to be going everywhere a little bit. But there are, and we have to kind of see where we think we can get wins the quickest and where those wins would be most beneficial democracy more broadly, right? And one of the things that keeps coming up in polling, in focus groups, and in statistical analysis of successful pro-democracy movements across the globe, the thing we need more of, friends, and I'm here to tell you, like, this is, you're going to know it when I say it, but we need people. We need you. We need more people to be mobilized. Going to a No Kings rally is great and fine, but what have you done since then, right? Have you donated to a cause? Have you donated Let's Fix This? We would appreciate that. Right now, our inability to be more successful is solely hampered by revenue. Like, we need, and staff. We need more people. We got to have more money to hire more people. Our intern will be coming back here in a couple of weeks. I'm trying to raise some money to hire some more full-time staff. If you have not yet become a monthly donor to Let's Fix This, even $10 a month sounds like nothing. That's probably half the price of Netflix. Super helpful because it adds up, because it's not just you giving $10 a month. It's you and 99 other people giving $10 a month. And suddenly, now we've got like some enough revenue to like do something with. So please consider giving $10 or even $25 a month. I know it's a lot to ask in these economic times, but if you've got the means to contribute $25, to our donors who give us like $100 a month, oh my God, friends, thank you so much. You have a special phone call from me coming up very soon as we send all of our end of year receipts out for that stuff. But if you were looking for a resolution for next year, giving to organizations like Let's Fix This means a whole lot. If you don't have the treasure to give, please give your time. I mean, we'd love to have both, to be fair and totally honest. But volunteering with Let's Fix This, right now we are in desperate need of people to help collect signatures for State Question 836. We've got less than a month. We're really trying to hit it and end on a high note. These, you know, the signature collection tends to like steadily ramp up all the way to the end of collection. And so this is the time where we're really just trying to churn in as many like valid signatures as we can. And that's where volunteers are a huge help. So if you haven't yet signed, please do. You can go to, I think it's yeson836.com. If you just Google Yes on 836, you'll find the website. There's a list on there of all the drop-in locations. I will be at Elemental Coffee almost every day for the next, till the 26th, right? If it's not me, someone else will be there with an opportunity to sign. So please drop by and sign in there. Or if you would willing to collect signatures, 20 signatures in your neighborhood, right, would be huge. At your church, your soccer team, whatever, your book club, if you could do it, it would be a huge deal. Please do. And just reach out to me. Send an email, andy@letsfixthis.org, and I'll get you hooked up. I'm trying to coordinate Oklahoma City Metro. We need your help. Also, later in this year, we're going to be ramping up our voter registration efforts, right? As we do in every election year, I can think about Earth Day in April, is always a big festival in Oklahoma City. We'll try to be there. We'll start doing more stuff in the Plaza District and looking for opportunities. We need more volunteers everywhere to help collect voter registrations. It's fun. It's like you stand around for 3 hours and talk to people. If you're an introvert, maybe it's not for you. I get it. Like, maybe that makes your skin crawl, the idea of that. It's not a ton of conversations. Like, and often, you know, we need people who are outgoing and like have clipboards and are like in the crowd doing that. We also need folks kind of stand at the table. And so we can tag team, right? We can try to pair you with an extrovert, whatever works. But it gives you something to do. It's a tangible way for you as a citizen of this great nation to be more impactful in helping improve the civic fabric of our world. So please go to our website and sign up for our volunteer list. We'll make sure that we get you plugged in. I mentioned CivicsCon is a big deal. And this year, because it's a big election year for Oklahoma, right? All of the statewide elected offices, all of the legislature, all the state house and half the state senate. There's a lot of stuff on the ballot. And that means a lot of education is needed. A lot of voters don't know what the lieutenant governor does or the state auditor or whatever. And so we're going to be doing that. Talking a lot more, I suspect, about the initiative petition process, because whatever happens with the lawsuit about Senate Bill 1027, we know they're coming for it, right? They are trying to so restrict the initiative petition process that it's unusable. And then we'll be stuck. So friends, please tap in, tag in, sign up, show up, be a fixer, be a part of the movement of you and several thousand other Oklahomans who are saying, all right, 2026 is our year. We're going to show up. We're going to donate. We're going to give our time. We're going to be a little beacon of democracy in our neighborhood. And I can't wait to see what we do together. All right, friends, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with kind of more regular scheduled content. And I look forward to another year of Let's Pod This here with you. Have a great week. Oh, and remember, decisions are made by those who show up.